can't swing a business plan around without hitting a venture capitalist in Silicon Valley. But that's not the case almost everywhere else. This week on Techonomics, host Jason Middleton explores how VC can be utilized or ignored for high-performance entrepreneurs. That interview starts now.
Hello and welcome back, and thanks for listening. Here in the Bay Area, it is possible to take the Silicon Valley culture, business-wise at least, for granted. I'm not talking about the repercussions of being the largest engine of the economy, meaning everything from ridiculous cost of living here and incredible public art, among other things. I mean the culture of talent, the courage to fail, and starting something new without bias if you do fail in the previous one. The rest of the country doesn't have that, especially around venture capital.
The great difference here is that in Silicon Valley, over 90% used venture capital, but three-quarters of them delayed it. Outside Silicon Valley, 90% never got venture capital and 10% delayed it.
In descending order outside of the Valley, New York, LA, and Boston, there's just not much infrastructure for venture capital and even less anywhere else. So entrepreneurs are doing what they do best, getting creative. A former and highly successful VC turned professor has some thoughts on that dynamic. Here we go.
Dilip Rao, and I'm a clinical professor at Florida International University, and I teach at University of Minnesota and INCAI in Costa Rica.
Let's talk about high-performance entrepreneurship. That's a loaded phrase in a way. Could you define it for us?
Sure. It's basically entrepreneurs who start from scratch and build businesses to over $1 billion in sales and valuation. And the second tier are those who build it to over $100 million in sales and valuation. So it's not just
$100 million or $100 billion?
$100 million.
$100 billion.
Is the lower level.
Lower level.
$1 billion is the higher level.
Got it. So it's bootstrap to unicorn.
Yes.
Do you like
has a different connotation.
Yeah,
unicorn
I was going to ask
is,
you.
Is only valuation. I'm looking for valuation and sales. So there is some substance there. It's not just
hype.
Some yes, not just hype.
Okay, momentum stocks.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
What drove you to this formula for this definition?
It was a long process. Basically, I was a venture financier. I did leverage buyouts and venture capital and lending for 23 years, retired a number of years ago. Nothing to do, so started teaching and started interviewing and bringing in great entrepreneurs. Minnesota is filled with $1 billion entrepreneurs and $100 million entrepreneurs. And I found out that their method of growth was totally different from the venture capital method. And I was totally surprised because I'd just been conditioned to thinking that the venture capital method is the only method. You get an idea, get financing, and start your idea and launch. And most of these people had never raised venture capital.
Right.
Dick Schultz, for instance, who built Best Buy, started with 9,000. Bob Kierlin, who built Fastenal, did it with 31,000. Nothing else. No other financing.
Wow.
And, I mean, they got money from lenders and lessors and so forth. And I basically said, how many of these people are there? So I started looking around Minnesota, and I found 28. And I interviewed them for my last book. And I said, how many of them are in the country? And I found 85. And these are billion-dollar entrepreneurs. And this is the fascinating thing, Jason. I found out that out of the 85 billion-dollar entrepreneurs, 94% took off without venture capital.
That's
94%. Only 6% got venture capital early. And those who basically delayed venture capital kept control.
Uh-huh.
Out of the 94%, 76% never got venture capital. The great difference here is that in Silicon Valley, over 90% used venture capital, but three-quarters of them delayed it. Outside Silicon Valley, 90% never got venture capital and 10% delayed it. There's a huge difference between Silicon Valley and the rest of the country, and we don't recognize it. And what's happening in the rest of the country is that people are thinking, oh, we need to follow the Silicon Valley method. It hasn't worked because they have to beat Silicon Valley, and that has been impossible for many entrepreneurs.
This is a fascinating dynamic that you've uncovered here.
I think so.
VC does not necessarily have a positive connotation at all times.
Mm-hmm.
There is a reputation of hyper-control and positions on the board and, and moving things a certain direction. Do you find that that might be an underpinning to what your formula and your summary comes out to?
Absolutely. That's the core of the whole thing. My first advice to entrepreneurs right now is no matter what you do, don't lose control. The first basic reason is you get to set the tone and direction of your company. Don't think that a hired gun is going to do that as well as you can.
Okay.
The second and more important reason is if you want to create wealth and keep a significant share of it, if you're doing it for charitable purposes and make everybody else rich, hallelujah, do what you want.
Right.
But if you want to keep the wealth you've created, you better learn how to take off without venture capital. If you need venture capital after you take off, then you get it, but you control it, like Mark Zuckerberg. If you don't need venture capital, like 76% of the billion-dollar entrepreneurs, then you better have the skills to go through the various stages and the various steps. And that's the key part. They have to learn the skills. They have to become better entrepreneurs.
But is it, okay, so that would create a situation where VC early can be seen as a crutch because you're onboarding experience within the market, maybe not within your sector, but within the market for launch or exit, right? Which is all VC really cares about is exit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, ultimately, if you don't bring in the VC early, how do you, I mean, you say you have to learn it, but that's, you're trying to build the plane while you're flying it already. How do you have time to learn it?
Absolutely, absolutely. And well, that's the key. There are three stages and there are three skills at each stage. What I found is that at the idea stage, you need to learn how to build the product, which means that if you look at most of the people who succeeded, most of them had skills in the industry they went to. Let me explain.
Okay.
Zuckerberg knew coding. Gates knew coding. Steve Ells, who built Chipotle, was a chef. They knew the industry they went to. So it wasn't as if, you know, I have this brilliant idea, let me hire someone. Well, that's how Zuckerberg got the idea.
Native knowledge to a sector.
Exactly. You have to know the sector, which means that's why you need passion. What are you going into? Okay? So passion is a misused word, but the whole idea is you better have skills in that. Otherwise, someone else could steal your idea, like Steve Jobs did, and take off from there.
That graphic interface thing.
Exactly. The second aspect is they need to learn how to sell. This is the most important aspect I found. About 76% of the billion-dollar entrepreneurs knew sales and or marketing. They knew how to sell. It wasn't as if, hey, here I've got this brilliant idea and the world will come and buy it from me. Nobody comes and buys it from you.
Right.
You have to learn how to sell. And Bill Gates, even though people think he wasn't a great salesman, he spent a lot of time on PR. He knew how to sell. And the third, and this is the most important aspect, this is where I came from when I built my fund, is they have financial management skills. Okay?
Okay?
So if you really look at these billion-dollar entrepreneurs, is they were technical geeks and CPAs mm-hmm. who knew how to sell.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That's how you reach the top of the pyramid. Now, if you want to reach a lower level, maybe you don't have all those skills. You need to learn them. Now, that's the idea stage. I can go on, but I know you have...
I've got plenty of questions floating around now. Yeah. First of all, it's confirmation bias for me to hear you say selling and marketing. I am a marketing analyst as well
mm-hmm.
and consultant, and I have long argued with many VCs who have sat in that very chair that onboarding marketing earlier in the process of the J-curve is way more important, and the soft skill value there is way more valuable earlier in the process, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not at seed, but maybe mm-hmm. around A.
Yes.
Would you agree with me on that, or do you think that I may be overstating the importance
Actually,
of marketing?
Even before A. Yes. And the whole point is we talk a lot about pivot and adjust and so forth. To me, that is the essence of it. If you start to listen to people like, you know, we financed Walmart when Sam Walton was expanding. Yeah, that's how old I am.
Okay.
We financed.
Good on you, though.
Thank you. And we funded many of these companies. What they did was they adjusted their strategy. They adjusted their business. How did they know how to adjust it? They learned what their customers wanted.
Mm-hmm.
So they learned how to sell. Horst, who built Aveda, was a genius at this. He mm-hmm. basically said, you know, he was a great hair designer. But he said, what I want isn't important. It is what the woman wants, what my customer wants. And so he said, what do I do to make her happy? That's sales in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
So all these people learned sales early to make the customers happy. And then they learned marketing in order to adjust their venture to where the market was growing.
Right.
And so that's what everybody calls pivot now.
Yes.
But that was, I call it revisioning, because you're revisioning where the industry is going, where you can dominate. But you need to know the market and your competitors in order to position yourself.
I would add to that, and you may have implied this, but when you pivot, revision, alignment is incredibly important. And that's where marketing skills come in, because if your company and your team is not aligned, then you have not identified where your value prop is.
Absolutely. And alignment, as you put it, is very key for another reason. And the other reason is all of these people grew without venture capital because they were able to do more with less. Okay?
Yes.
That means if I'm an ordinary entrepreneur and I can get $2 in sales for $1 of selling cost,
right,
these people were able to get 4 or 5. How did they get 4 or 5? They were able to figure out not just how to sell, but what the sales driver is.
Mm-hmm.
They were able to figure out what the right marketing channel is, what the right marketing strategy is. So it's not just a one-size-fits-all. What Bill Gates realized is that PR is what he should do to expand. What Mark Zuckerberg figured out is that he should market to universities.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy was very smart because he started with Harvard and then went to Stanford. He started from the top. Every university at the second, third, fourth tier wanted to be like them, all these students. So they were terrific at the whole positioning, sales,
right,
marketing, and were able to get more for less as opposed to just raising money.
In your answer, I heard customer acquisition costs coming in at 3x lower than a VC early stage investment.
Absolutely. Yeah. Not just customer acquisition, customer identification, customer acquisition, all of that factors in.
But wouldn't that come up earlier when you're identifying a market opportunity? I mean, wouldn't your customer identification be really early stage?
Well, yes, but the trouble is there's a lot of fog. It's like San Francisco.
Right.
And the point is that many of these entrepreneurs either jumped on an emerging trend or they jumped on an emerging industry. Okay.
Okay.
If you really look at the core result, there are only about two ways to grow your business if you don't include acquisitions. And the two ways are either you jump on an emerging trend or emerging industry and ride that curve, or you steal share.
Right.
Stealing share is extremely difficult.
Yes, it is.
And it's extremely difficult without money. So it's something that large corporations do, but from an entrepreneur's perspective, most people don't have that kind of money and don't have that kind of access, which means you need to get on an emerging trend or emerging industry. Now, it is not clear in an emerging industry what is the right positioning, what is the right strategy. MySpace was there ahead of Zuckerberg.
Mm-hmm.
Who would have guessed that going to Harvard and getting those students first and then going to Stanford, going to university students, would be the strategy to build Zuckerberg and beat MySpace.
Yeah.
So the point is, you need to understand the market, and that's what the whole issue of pivot is. You're going to the right market. Sam Walton, for instance, we funded him because I used to fund many companies in small towns. And his whole strategy, unlike Kmart and Target, was going into small towns.
Yes.
And so we funded them.
And then devastating the local economy.
Exactly.
Frankly.
And there were all kinds of laws and regulations passed to keep him out. They couldn't, because in some of them, you just went out just outside the city boundary,
yeah,
and built it there. We had 3 shopping centers outside city boundaries that we funded,
right,
for him. So it's basically you're trying to figure out the right market in order to do it. Now, in his case, he was already selling to small towns. He was already in Arkansas small towns.
Mm-hmm.
He basically went into the big stores in small towns.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where you go against accepted wisdom. One of the things I found is nearly all of these people had something that they did against accepted wisdom. His was everybody thought you can't build a big store in small towns. Well, he proved them wrong.
Let's pull back out again, because I have you here and you've shined a light on the VC culture here in the Valley as opposed to where you live. What else is happening where you live in Minnesota? St. Paul's beautiful. My wife is from there. What are you seeing there? What kind of companies are being built there that are getting so much traction?
Let's look at around the country.
Okay.
Because I travel all over. I teach in Florida. I live
right
in Minnesota. I teach in Costa Rica.
You're like a correspondent. I should have you on more often.
Well, I'll be glad to come. I need a reason to come to San Francisco.
Good enough.
Yes. There's a huge divide. There's a huge gap between Silicon Valley and the rest of the country. We can talk about Minnesota. We can talk about Miami. The trouble in all of these other places is you don't have the infrastructure. You don't have the
right
infrastructure of financing. You don't have the infrastructure of technology.
talent.
You don't have the entrepreneurs with the talent. You don't have the culture. In many cases, I don't want to name names because I don't want to
understood
anyone down.
Sure.
But the whole point is if you have one failure in a venture, people remember you. Oh, that guy failed in a venture 20 years ago.
Mm.
They remember that long. Here, nobody cares. Nobody gives a damn.
You're right.
It is such a wonderful culture.
Move fast, break things.
Exactly. Move on. You know, you try something, doesn't work, fine. Good. Get into a second one. That's one of the key differences.
Mm.
Secondly, you have in Silicon Valley the most amazing concentration of technology talent I think the world has seen. And if you look at the arc of history, I mean, this could be compared in the commercial sense to Rome and Athens and Vienna and Venice and all these city-states.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Silicon Valley has become. People are attracted here. The best in the world in technology are attracted here. Along with that, you have the angels. That is a key talent and resource that we don't value as much, especially angels who don't want control. I've seen angels in other places. And the first thing they do is they ask for control. They take 51%. They take 60%. Here they don't.
No.
I mean, if you look at Google, they got 1 million plus without losing control.
Right.
Zuckerberg got proxy rights.
You have 60% voting.
Exactly. So you have a culture here of angels who invest. And often angels have the experience of actually building companies in many cases.
Mm-hmm.
That experience can be added. And then you have, if you grow, you have the big money, the VCs. VCs late is fine as long as...
Right, because you're scaling.
Exactly. As long as the entrepreneur doesn't lose control to them.
Okay.
And so here you have everything. In the rest of the world, you don't. And what you need to start... See, this is where everybody has, in my perspective, screwed up. They have taken the wrong lessons from Silicon Valley. What they assume is that it's the VCs that have made Silicon Valley. It isn't.
No.
It's the entrepreneurs.
Yes.
And so what you need to do is not just entrepreneurs, but entrepreneurs with technical talent, sales talent, and financial talent in the emerging industries.
Right.
And if you look at Utah, Utah is doing that right now. Utah has actually built two or three $100 million companies and one or two $1 billion companies. And maybe Utah is lucky that they may not have too many VCs there, but I heard that some Silicon Valley VCs are going there.
Mm.
So I don't know if that's good or bad.
Right. They probably don't know either.
Exactly. But the point is, I think you need the infrastructure of great entrepreneurs, technical talent, sales talent, financial talent. And what I'm trying to do with two or three universities right now is to teach everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Teach 50,000 people online.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, to me, online education is the coming thing. And
sure.
So these 50,000 people, because you can't look into people's eyes and say, you will be, Jason, a great entrepreneur. We don't know. 12 people turned Steve Jobs down. And in my opinion, perhaps one of the greatest entrepreneurs of the last 50 years.
Oh, yeah.
And if 12 people can turn him down after looking into his eyes, and one of them, Tom Perkins, even said that we couldn't evaluate how great he would be by meeting him.
Right.
You know, how can we evaluate other people?
That's a very good point.
So you teach 50,000 people, maybe 10,000 are motivated, maybe 100 are talented, and those are the 100 who will grow. Once they reach a certain level, that's when you fund them. It's a bottom-up approach, and the trouble is the top-down controls the world.
Yes.
And they have manipulated the media in order to keep positioning themselves. So we need to have a revolution here, and the entrepreneurs need to grow from the bottom up.
This has been fascinating, Professor. Thank you for coming in.
Oh, my pleasure.
That was Dilip Rao, a former VC and now a professor at the University of Minnesota. For links to his work, his profile, and a free copy of his book, The Truth About Venture Capital, 26 Reasons to Avoid VC, and 5 Reasons to Delay It, go to KGORadio.com and look for the show notes that go with this week's program. And that's going to do it for this week's show. We hope you like the stories enough to share them around. You can find the podcast archive pretty much anywhere you graze for your podcasts. Just keyword search Techonomics. We also post at facebook.com/Techonomics Radio. Links to the music we choose go up there as well. And finally, I am on Twitter at KGOJason. For producer Liana Wilcox and executive producer Mike Anthony, I'm the host and the writer, Jason Middleton. This has been Techonomics. Have great weeks, everybody.